And once again, welcome to another exciting edition of City Spotlight Special Edition. Dave Krieger with you and RJ Malloy coming to you from Studio A here in Northport, Florida. And I'll tell you, if it can get any more intense, this radio broadcast is it. We're talking with someone, and I know that you've all had a lot of questions for weeks and weeks we've gone on about COVID-19, the SARS coronavirus, and everything but science. We've had Dr. David Martin, who also is from the University of Virginia, on this program as well. But we have, we just always got to do one better. And we have with us the author of Plague of Corruption, Dr. Judy Mikovits. And she worked with a Juris Doctorate named Kent Heckenlively. And the foreword of the book was written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So just so you know, I've read the entire book. And I was blown away by it. I think I understand the science a lot more than most people do. And, of course, Dr. Mikovits is going to try to keep things in perspective in layman's terms throughout the broadcast. But this is a woman who basically spent her life training to be a research scientist in honor of her grandfather, who died of cancer when she was a teenager. She earned her BA from University of Virginia and a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology from George Washington University. She has spent 35 years understanding and treating chronic diseases, studying immunology, natural products, chemistry, epigenetics, virology, and drug development. In just over 20 years, she rose from an entry-level lab tech to become director of the Lab of Antiviral Drug Mechanisms at the National Cancer Institute before leaving to direct the cancer biology program at Epigenex Pharmaceuticals in Santa Barbara, California. And she has done so much work studying the plight of patients with chronic fatigue syndrome and autism. In only 5 years, she developed the first Neuroimmune Institute from a concept to reality. She's primarily responsible for demonstrating the relationship between immune-based inflammation and these diseases, and she's published over 50 scientific papers. And unfortunately, she's also published a couple of scientific papers that maybe weren't exactly what she intended to be published. Dr. Judy Mikovits, welcome to City Spotlight.
Thank you, RJ and Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm just blown away by this book, Dead Doctors and everything else. I mean, this is just the craziness of what's going on. I mean, I'm looking at Big Pharma and CDC and the world's or at least our nation's blood supply, and I'm in shock at the stuff I read in this book. And, you know, I don't care if you scare the hell out of people. They need to understand it, because right now there's such a conflict with people wearing masks and not wearing masks. And, I mean, as somebody that's been in the front end of public health and all of these neuroimmune diseases, we're looking at issues now that are very relevant to how we are going to continue to exist over time. And I know you have some perspective on that as far as coronavirus and how this thing got started. Well, we're still trying to figure out, Dr. Mikovits, whether or not this was an accident or it's biowarfare or what it is. Take us into the science of it.
Yeah, thanks. I will. First, those few papers that I did intend to publish exactly that way, showing exactly the data that we were finding. What I didn't expect was the reaction I got, which was to be driven out of science because our work revealed an inconvenient truth. But what it led me to understand, and that's why we wrote. So our first book was called Plague, and it talked about the detailed science and how the government went about and the scientific community went about and goes about every day, which few people know, making science that doesn't fit the narrative or go away be interpreted in a way which can then fit the narrative. And if you refuse to interpret the data in a way that the government doesn't allow, well, then they will end your career, if not end your life. And we see that clearly with COVID-19 because the origin of, you know, SARS-CoV-2, the infectious agent, which has been said to be the causative agent of COVID-19, but clearly fits none of the criteria of what is called Koch's postulates for causation for a microbial agent. You have to isolate the virus from the sick people, semi-purify it, transmit it to secondary transmission to other people, have it infect other people by the natural transmission routes, whether through blood or through secretions such as coughing, the droplets, aerosolization, as we know. So what you do to satisfy causation for an agent or strong association for an agent is in research is you do the biology, you isolate the agent, and then you isolate it from the people with the disease. In COVID-19, that has not been done. A PCR is not the isolation of the agent. It only shows the nucleic acid detected in the people. So what had happened all the way back in 2006 when I was working in prostate cancer with Johns Hopkins, with the companies Epigenics and Genius that you talked about in California here, prior to the Neuroimmune Institute, when we were still looking at diagnosing and treating the most aggressive cancers and trying to understand why certain cancers, certain families had more aggressive cancer, simply in prostate cancer was, and breast cancer is associated with infectious agents. So this virus then, that was named XMRV, retrovirus related to mouse retroviruses, the sequences by PCR were found in men with, in families with a very specific immune defect, which means they could not degrade the virus, you know, like a Pac-Man. They couldn't, it was an RNA virus, retroviruses or RNA DNA viruses, but an envelope RNA virus, which is SARS coronavirus is as well. So I'm going to show you throughout the show how that we can make the parallels with what we're being told now and what we were, you know, what we proved, and they have totally failed to prove with respect to SARS-CoV-2, no matter the origin. And that's really important because biologically we have many redundant pathways, particularly in the type 1 interferon pathway. And this is what that pathway was. The original paper published by DeRisi and Silverman said we found sequences of XMRV in men with this very. They couldn't degrade RNA viruses fast enough, so they were more susceptible to being carriers. And this is a retrovirus where you actually are an asymptomatic carrier. And every immune activation event will cause more and more disease as the virus itself doesn't cause the disease. It's that cytokine storm, that disease signature, that hyper inflammation. The fire is too high. So this is what we found in the XMRVs. These were now contagious cancer-causing retroviruses. Our paper was published describing in October 8, 2009, the first ever isolation of that prostate cancer associated virus, XMRV virus family. We learned in the paper, in the data, there were several strains and they were associated with many diseases, and we associated it with the neuroimmune disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, or myalgic encephalomyelitis. That's inflammation of the brain and the spinal cord. And we developed, before we isolated the virus, we went to the patients with that hyperimmune disease signature, that cytokine storm. Because if you don't have that cytokine storm, we can't isolate the virus because the immune system is keeping it latent or dormant and quiet, and therefore it's not causative of disease. This was, you know, my entire work of 40 years. I started purifying type 1 interferon and using it as immune therapy. So in COVID-19, we're being told there's a virus, but I haven't seen a single that causes SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19, and I have not seen the isolation of that virus from a person with the disease on autopsy. It killed you, not something else. In fact, the autopsies show other bacteria. Well, the problem with our work and the reason why the government went after me with such ferocity is it was very clear this family of contagious mouse cancer-causing retroviruses and neuroimmune disease strongly associated with leukemia, lymphoma, not only the original prostate cancer, but Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's disease, chronic Lyme disease, 32 diseases where there was evidence of retroviruses, you know, being contributing to the people who got the disease. So what we know about SARS-CoV-2 right now today is that most of the people who have evidence of infection, that is either the antibody or the RNA, which is the absolute wrong diagnostic test, and that thread winds through our story in our first book, Plague. You know, we were in fact, you know, told, oh, you can't do that test. You know, we'll just, you know, it's not a diagnostic test, never was. It's a research tool. And the serology test, which was in our original paper, clearly showed up to 50 million Americans. That's 25 times to 50 times HIV AIDS causing virus that was in the population in 1991, which was the height of HIV epidemic in the United States, and the blood supply, and then we later found in 2011, we discovered the blood supply was heavily contaminated and had been so since the early days of HIV. And this was the big shut it down. It's going through the vaccines, and it comes through specifically MMR, which is three RNA viruses, and the polio vaccine, if not others. The flu shots certainly contain retroviruses every year, as birds have retroviruses. And then dog cells. Dogs don't have as many retroviruses, but they have coronaviruses. So when you grow a virus, you must grow it in a cell line. Every time you grow up, these viruses don't have repair editing function. So when they're polymerases, when they're reverse transcriptases in the case of retroviruses, make a mistake, the mistakes change. So there's a lot of hypervariation that you could get a lot of different strains in a short period of time, which doesn't match evolution period of time, because we're growing these in cell lines, continuously growing immune dysfunctional cell lines, Vero monkey kidney cells. That's what coronavirus was grown in. That's what Tony Fauci paid for, to send that cell line from Fort Detrick in USAMRIID, U.S. Army Research Institute of Infectious Disease, and send to China. And China mixed the animal tissues with it. Now, there are many monkey viruses, XMRVs and others, SV40 and other viruses that have been characterized, transmitted to the human population from that polio vaccine, those live viral vaccines. And clearly our data in 2011 showed 30% of all people with a bleeding disorder called ITP, a platelet disorder, idiopathic thrombocytopenia, 30% of the people were seropositive or had PCR protein or sequence evidence of an XMRV infection, and XMRV, a strain, not one strain. So you can see how the narrative gets totally twisted around in what they're saying now and what they're covering up. So the people that will be hurt and have been hurt and have been killed are people who are carriers and susceptible to coronavirus, because the kids with autism have the lowest levels of glutathione and have mitochondrial deficiencies. AIDS patients, HIV patients, infected patients, they don't have AIDS if they're just HIV carriers. But we never give them a vaccine. We don't deplete their oxygen. We don't wear a mask. We certainly don't immune suppress the memory responses, which is what a mask does, as studies that in a beautiful paper written by Dr. Blaylock showed a few weeks ago.
Dr. Judy, if we can take you back to a beginning part of what you said, talk about Fort Detrick. What was that all about? Because we hear all kinds of conflicting stories about that.
On June 10th, 1980, when I started purifying in the fermentation chemistry program there. So Fort Detrick used to be biowarfare. When then President Nixon declared a war on cancer, I believe it was 71. I was a kid, so I was still in, I don't even think I was in high school. He started the National Cancer Institute, one of the institutes in health. And that cancer institute was first housed at Fort Detrick in Frederick, Maryland. Then it was, it housed the satellites, the red phones to Russia. And it was also home, as I said, right across a baseball field, from my cancer, the laboratories I worked in for 22 years, the next 22 years since June 10th, 1980. My last day was May 11th, 2001, when after I got married in 2000, we decided to move to California, where I started that epigenics company to continue our work in making therapeutics and diagnostics. So there at Fort Detrick, the Cancer Institute, we were fermenting. We were growing HTLV-1. We were growing biological therapies. HTLV-1, human T-cell leukemia or lymphoma virus, was the first human cancer-causing. It caused a very specific type, very aggressive T-cell leukemia, and it's associated with many inflammatory diseases and autoimmune diseases that we now know 40 years after its first isolation by Bernie Poise and Frank Rossetti. Frank Rossetti became my mentor. I first started working with him, lifelong mentor, June 6, 1983. So yeah, D-Day, there was, we laugh about that all the time. But at any rate, our whole purpose, our whole theme is that if we understand why some people get ATL or the associated diseases, which we didn't even know about at the time, and why most people remain healthy. What is the immune response? What is the genetic or epigenetic susceptibility? What is the co-pathogen or toxin? So that's the kind of work I did there. Well, for two decades, my PhD thesis, which I defended November 14th of 1991, I started it in the fall of 1987. And at that time, HIV was literally killing everyone who got it, because the therapies were targeting the wrong cell population. We knew in the therapeutic responses weren't appropriate for what we were seeing clinically, didn't bear out in the science. And what I mean by that is only 1 in 10,000 T cells was infected by HIV, and yet all of them were dying. And what we would do, and what that says, is there's another shooter. There's a Trojan horse. There's another. It's an indirect effect. And that's what we knew and we learned about adult T-cell leukemia, the ATL with HTLV-1. Those cells aren't the infected cells, but they get cancer because there's another cell where the communication between the cytokines and chemokines, those signaling molecules that tell the cells what to do in a given tissue and how to respond, were dysregulated. And so that we actually, my PhD said, no, the monocyte macrophage is the shooter. And at the time, the only receptor that was known was something called CD4. And that's a molecule on a very specific subset of T cells, the very T cells that are depressed if you wear a mask, I'll say. So when I tried to publish these papers, they basically said, you're crazy. Everybody knows the monocyte macrophage doesn't have CD4 receptor on it. And it has to be, you're wrong. It has to be contamination. So we use this contamination word a lot, like Tony Fauci uses this anecdotal word. You know, there's no evidence of contamination. There's no possibility of contamination. But we're not going to make the simple solution that there's another receptor. And we're not going to believe the data. We're just going to believe the most far-fetched story there is. And this is what is difficult. So those papers didn't get published for a long time. They said, and I didn't believe your last paper either. But my PhD thesis, because, you know, you needed to get at George Washington University 2 papers published. I ultimately had 5 papers that changed 3 fields of medicine, epigenetics and the monocyte macrophage, because we were co-developing therapies at the time with Candace Pert, peptide T. And it's the subject of the Dallas Buyers Club. So all of this is and that prevents the interaction of the monocyte macrophage and the T cell. And it was a curative therapy that in the 80s, we didn't know why it worked, but it was denied the men, while the more aggressive, toxic, high doses of AZT was pushed on them and forced on them. Another product that was helping them that nobody would allow anybody to learn was cannabis, helping them not to get the cachexia, to be able to metabolize. And we now understand that we have an endogenous cannabinoid system. So in Fort Detrick, after I finished my postdoctoral studies, which part of my postdoctoral studies, I was asked to go to the USAMRIID, that biosafety level 4 facility, and be part of a collaboration with my laboratory I was still working as a postdoctoral fellow under Dr. Rossetti and Dr. Dave Dursey, a molecular virologist, and that was my next step of my training. What we did in those postdoctoral studies was we had to determine why the Ebola Zaire strain was so highly pathogenic, meaning killed all the cells, and yet it didn't kill any the Zaire strain, I mean the Reston strain. So 2 different strains, which we didn't have the kinds of sequencing capabilities we have now. We only isolated the virus, and we didn't know exactly the sequence of the strains where we could think about them the way you can now in SARS-CoV-2 with the HIV sequences and try to understand what happened. So my first job, I can't study a virus if it kills all the cells it infects. I must grow a lot of virus and be able to isolate it, as I just told you, purify it, and do the kind of studies in vitro, in the laboratory, in cell lines, and ask what happens. So it was clear that the monocyte macrophage was at the heart of the disease because it's that tumor-associated or that inflammatory macrophage that gets stuck, turned on. And the same thing is true with COVID-19, which is coronaviruses come from bats, but Ebola comes from bats through intermediate hosts as well. And so these viruses, while not the same family, they tend to infect the same cells. So in order to study a virus, you have to grow it up. You have to produce large quantities. So I went to that biosafety level 4 facility, and for a couple of years, I looked, you think about it using your intelligence. And I'm going to look for a monkey or another small animal, because that's how in natural evolution these viruses jump. They jump to another small animal that's closer to a human, because they're going to kill all the human cells. It's not that they never infected human cells before, which I misspoke on plandemic. It's that they killed everyone. You can't study why they're killing everyone if they kill everyone. And this is the example I can give is Hanta. The reason Hanta virus is, you remember in New Mexico, you know, that it would jump from the mouse or wherever it was coming from into the human. And it was a deadly infection, but it killed four or five people. And that's the end of it. And epidemics traditionally, you know, kill, yes, they kill people, but not very many because they burn themselves out. And in our first book, we used the quote in the beginning that an inefficient virus kills its host. That's not a virus's, a virus wants to persist in the host and live forever and expand in the host. So this is what I was doing at Fort Detrick. So I found that Vero monkey kidney cells, V-E-R-O, and that the thing's called E6, and E6 is a clone. So we would clone single cells and see if we could get a defective cell that wouldn't die. It's a lot of work. It takes a long time. You're transforming, you're immortalizing cells. You're literally creating laboratory cancer cells so that you can grow it up in those fermenters like I worked in fermentation chemistry in the beginning. So we ultimately succeeded to get the Vero E6. We were able to harvest the virus and then infect primary monocytes with both the Zaire strain and the non-disease-causing Reston strain. And then we did a subtractive. We infected primary human monocytes, got them straight from humans, normal cells, isolated. That's what I did. When you do a postdoc, you tend to confirm and extend in the range of your studies so that you can change whole fields. That's what PhDs do over MDs. They practice what we discover and teach. So at the end of the day, we got an inflammatory signature. We published it in a meeting in 1999, and I provided that paper to Mickey Wallace and various people to show that, no, that criticism is wrong. I did work there. Yes, trying to simplify it and say it didn't infect humans before. Okay, tweak it. I'm trying to make it understandable, and I know it's complex. But at any rate, this is the work that was done. The inflammatory signature is an inflammatory signature that could be COVID-19, that could be XMRV. There are only one or two cytokines different, and the technology in 99 was inferior to the technology we had in 2011 when we got a literally overlapping inflammatory signature for the XMRVs. And now here you come with something you're calling COVID-19, and there's no data to support this single agent SARS-CoV-2 is causative of anything, because we know that 99% of the people who get infected are walking around. They're incorrectly called asymptomatic carriers because you don't carry a coronavirus. You clear it. It doesn't integrate and stay in the cells for the life of the host.
Wow. Okay. So Dr. Mikovits, the one thing that I really want to stress here, because our listeners, you know, you just gave us a huge diatribe of some very, very intense science. And, you know, from a layman's perspective, I'm looking at, you worked in a lab that basically created toxic biowarfare agents, and you did it in order to be able to study its effect on human beings. But at the same time, there are like cause and effect scenarios that we've been questioning forever and a day, ever since World Health Organization got knowledge that something happened in Wuhan. And we're sitting here wondering, was this a naturally occurring issue, or We're of the opinion it was synthetically created in a lab, and whether it got out by accident or whether it was intentionally released on the world. What's your take on that?
Well, absolutely, it's not synthetic, because the cell line you're manufacturing. You've got a little factory of growing these viruses, this family, the coronaviruses. Just like we built the little factory, we didn't make it. It's not synthetic. I didn't, all I did was transform Vero monkey kidney cells to make them a better virus factory. I'm not God. I didn't make monkey kidney cells. I just took them and immortalized them, is the word we call it. Make them live forever and divide forever outside of a monkey so that you can grow in 200 liter fermenters. And so this is exactly what happened to the coronaviruses. And it says in that 2015 paper, Nature Medicine paper, that the Wuhan lab, the Barrick lab, a Harvard lab, and a Switzerland lab were co-authors on, that they originally got the Vero monkey kidney cells. It says right in the methods from Fort Detrick. And originally, usually it takes several years to do the work to publish a paper. This could have been as early as 2012. And 2012 is just when Tony Fauci and Ian Lipkin fraudulently published the so-called replication study where I failed to replicate. They said we failed to replicate our work, and it was commission fraud. It was fraud that was, we would have found the association, and when we were, Tony Fauci stopped the study. He had me, you know, I was called a fugitive from felony, fugitive from justice, and everybody was told at the Marshall gates of NIH and in Bethesda and Fort Detrick, if I stepped foot on NIH property in 2012, starting in 2012, when the study, our confirmatory replication study, multi-center study it was called, was done, I would be arrested. So they put this out to the press and the news as, you know, she didn't validate her results. And you can look right in the paper and say, yeah, we did. Yes, we did. And we can show that Tony Fauci himself stopped the study. Table 3 showed that 6% of patients and 6% of controls were infected with XMRVs. That's still 30 million Americans. They said you failed to find the association with chronic fatigue syndrome, but they took the only cohort out with chronic fatigue syndrome. So yes, it's not synthetic from Fort Detrick, but it absolutely under full knowledge, because we didn't try to cause disease. What we were looking at is why. So why does the corona, this SARS-CoV-2, why did the models predict it was going to be so pathogenic? Was because you saw a similar very strong cytokine storm, a hyperinflammation. Well, that information also tells you how to prevent it with existing therapies like type 1 interferon, anti-inflammatories, IL-6 modulation, TNH. We have a lot of products on the market we've made for 40 years that could be used right now to stop that. No vaccine has ever been done for any of these viruses that actually works, and that is lifelong memory or prevents disease. Vaccines aren't intended to prevent disease. They're intended to ameliorate or make less disease. So yes, they use the exact same methods we had been using for 20 years. And they sent that virus factory, they sent the cell line back and forth from Switzerland to North Carolina. That is a little vial containing not only SARS-CoV-2, but XMRVs, SV40s, SIV, which is simian immune deficiency virus. That's where it could have picked up. That's where it could have picked up the HIV sequences with which Luc Montagnier and others published in some strains that were sequenced.
Let me ask you this. The big question that you bring up with that is, why would Dr. Fauci shut you down?
Because in 1991, the realization that the blood supply was contaminated and that, oh, wait a minute, a retrovirus doesn't know if you're a gay man, an IV drug user, or a prostitute. We were told there was no risk to anyone else, to women and children, to nurses and doctors, of HIV spread, and the blood supply was heavily contaminated, and that's happening right now, and that's why I say this importantly. And it had been since the 90s with the XMRVs. So at that time, 1 million Americans cost America and the world, the blood supply contaminated, the liability, what it costs, what we pay every HIV infected person, the people who died, Arthur Ashe, Ryan White, many, many people who got transfusions during surgical procedures. And this is all the movie The Band Played On. By the book is Randy Schiltz, The Band Played On, and the movie was 1993, I believe, with Alan Alda in it, and you can still find that on Netflix or Amazon Up. And so when you see that story, this is how Kent and I, when Kent and I decided to write this book, this is the reason. It's 25 times that. It would have crashed the entire economy. So he's covered up. There were other associations of retroviruses and chronic fatigue syndrome. This is Charles Ortlieb's book and other viruses. So you see the opportunistic infections, the HHV6, the CMV, the herpes viruses, because they cripple that very same components of the immune response. And so then they can no longer keep these viruses silent, and they wake up and they're part of the disease. They're not causative because alone they do nothing. A healthy person doesn't get Kaposi sarcoma. Only old men in the southern tip of Italy who ever really got Kaposi sarcoma. And then we learned with AIDS patients, Yuan Chang and Patrick Moore isolated HHV8, Kaposi sarcoma herpes virus. So the herpes viruses, you know, exist. Viruses rarely travel alone. As we're seeing autopsies from Italy, bacteria. Borrelia in similar CFS disease. So CFS had long been shown to be, you know, AIDS patients in women, but these were women and children, and they didn't have any evidence of XMRV. But what did Shai-Shing Lo, who worked on mycoplasmin, worked back in those early days of AIDS and thought mycoplasma was a causative agent? He had kept a box in his freezer for 20 years, whatever the time was, to our 2009 publication in Science, and he found, he pulled that box. It said it was samples from 1991 to 1994, the height of HIV at this time, and it said non-HIV AIDS because there was women and children and there was no evidence of HIV. 86% positive for XMRV, a blood supply contaminated for 30 years, driving this, and millions, if not tens of millions of Americans have CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, or an associated disease, and they're called crazy. Their children are born, and they're the most susceptible to getting autism because, you know, again, autism has the same disease signature and the same mitochondrial defects and inability to degrade or resist glutathione deficiency. So these, we've been called, the population had been called crazy, and, you know, and autism was just your bad. Your genetics and the genetic susceptibilities are in those inflammatory cytokines. So the big why is, oops, made a little mistake, folks. We destroyed the lives of tens of millions of Americans. We've known it. We've been covering it up. Just as Bobby Kennedy Jr. said yesterday, Tony Fauci had money to study autism, and he gets something like $17 million in 1994, and he used it to decide the genetic defect, which a single gene doesn't cause anything without an environmental toxin, you know, these viruses and lots of them. And this is the cost to the economy with HIV couldn't be borne with 25 to 50 times that, which is the XMRVs. And these people will be the first to die if they get any vaccine, because you don't cause hyperinflammation. And up until the time that Tony Fauci took me down deliberately with Ian Lipkin, and these are all the people he's paying laying off in SARS-CoV-2. Ian Lipkin in 2012 was awarded this new Center for Discovery and Diagnostics. And who is he funding? Roger Barrick at UNC, the one of the authors on the Wuhan study. And what are they looking at? Oh, that epigenetics. Oh, those mechanisms I show. Well, epigenetics of coronaviruses aren't retroviruses. So are you deliberately killing the people, those 25 to 50 million Americans, and I don't even know how many worldwide? In London, the blood supply was contaminated in 2010, and I showed that at a talk that's in our first book, and that's why Collins ordered Fauci to do the confirmatory study for 2.5 million. And as soon as we started getting it positive, after Fauci held me from getting into a laboratory and did all he did to me, you know, it's done. The study's done. Ian Lipkin commits fraud, applies a statistical program, says you can all go home, folks, you're safe, publishes a paper that says in the abstract there's no evidence, where table three clearly shows 6%, 6.2 and 6.2, our methods were exact. So you can see all of the parallels. It's a cover-up. COVID-19 is likely to have little to do with SARS-CoV-2, because remember, these XMRVs are contagious. They're spread exactly the same way. Coughing cancer, coughing neuroimmune disease, coughing. Think you might want to cover that up? It's trillions of dollars. And they're criminally liable because they've known this for a decade. They knew the lab workers were getting infected. They knew the nurses, the doctors. They've known since the 90s.
All right, so let's move towards two major issues that our listeners keep asking questions about. One is the vaccine. What's your take on, is there going to be a vaccine and should we be taking it?
No and no, and we shouldn't be taking any vaccine. So we've never developed a vaccine to HIV, SARS-1, MERS, and all of the studies show that the vaccines drive the pathogenesis, can kill you almost immediately. The flu vaccines, everybody needs to know, take no vaccine again until the appropriate safety studies and efficacy studies have done by independent people, not by the FDA, not by the CDC. These organizations should be closed, defunded, you know, for their criminal activity, and the brilliance and the millions of small companies that can make safe and effective vaccines with those various immune therapies, preventative, real, not injections, but you know, natural ways to develop herd immunity, as has clearly developed with SARS-CoV-2, and all the data say if you inject, you know, the vaccine formulations I've seen, that you will drive the disease and you will kill the people who have already cleared the virus and developed antibodies, if they see other members of the virus in their immune mechanisms that we understand and we've understood for 30 years that can contribute to this. And we don't know who's susceptible. I can tell you who's susceptible. It's the people with the disease signature. And we know who they are, and we could do those testing. And in fact, a longtime colleague of mine just developed a screening signature of who's susceptible with the pathways. It's called Breakthrough Genomics, breakthroughgenomics.com. And the scientist is Mary Beth Raines, PhD, longtime colleague, expert in diagnostics. They've just put together a diagnostic research tool. But that tool can be used right now to tell who's susceptible, at what points, it's multi-genes, at what points are they susceptible, and which drugs will they respond to. And if they respond, those drugs, they will be, are they resistant? Are they susceptible? And how should you prevent disease acquisition? So we don't, not only will there not be a vaccine, but we don't need a vaccine, and we shouldn't be spending the billions or trillions of dollars on these programs and continuing to lock down the American public when we absolutely know the prophylactics. These commercials are on TV, pre-exposure prophylactics for HIV/AIDS. We know the pre-exposure prophylaxis for COVID-19, and we're not using it, and they're continuing to fraudulently say. In fact, a study was just published, which another colleague, Tatiana Obendiets, broke down, showing that, oh no, these vaccines don't do the same thing, kill people, like the MERS vaccines developed in 2012. A publication came out saying, no, these are deadly, and she broke down the methods and showed at the scientific level how the studies varied, how they tweaked the technology to cover up the dangers by studying them for less time. So no, there won't be a vaccine. Please don't wait for it. They've never worked. And please don't get another vaccine. Anything, clear literature showing flu vaccines, DTaP vaccines, these things drive upper respiratory infection in the very susceptible by the contaminants, like the heavy loads of aluminum and the bacterial components that can accelerate reactive airway disease.
Okay, so Dr. Mikovits, about because our time is limited, of course, on the show, but our big concerns here is one, and this is a big thing, and it's causing arguments and fights in society, and that's whether to wear a mask or not. And I know that we talked off microphone about wearing a mask. You don't recommend it. Why?
Absolutely not. It depletes oxygen. Atmospheric oxygen is 21 to 0.5, something in that area. At 19.5% atmospheric oxygen, you will immediately have dizziness, oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is exactly what the viruses cause. They don't prevent the transmission of, these are 30 to 100 nanomolars. The best masks are 100 micron. You sweat. You put them in your pocket. You take them off. You're increasing CO2, is toxic at 10%. You exhale at 4%. The air has 0.4% or something like that. We're made to breathe air. You are immune suppressing. I mentioned Russell Blaylock's paper with several references. You immune suppress those CD4 T cells you need for memory immune responses. You cripple, you deplete your interferon alpha, that type 1 interferon, your frontline immune defense that is your natural vaccine, preventing it from a virus from seeding in you. You amplify, when you start immune suppressing, you activate those latent dormant viruses that your immune system take care of. So you will not only not prevent somebody else from getting sick, but you are now a little virus factory for anything that enters into that mask and you will spread it. And if you get any kind of vaccine and you wear a mask, you'll probably die within a few days, especially if you're the most susceptible, the elderly, the children with asthma, the 47% of Americans with reactive airway diseases. No, and healthy people don't spread disease, not coronavirus. It's very clear from all the data. In fact, a study just came out in UK that said, oh, we can't get enough participants for a vaccine trial because the transmission from human to human is a lot harder than we originally thought. So we can't get 10,000 people to transmit the virus to uninfected people because it's not that easy to transmit. So everything we've been said about wearing a mask is a lie. It will hurt us. It is hurting us. It immune suppresses in so many more ways than I just discussed.
So no mask, no vaccine. What should we do to strengthen our immune systems? That seems to be the only thing that's left.
Yeah, and if we get correct. COVID, what are we supposed to do about it?
Well, if you get the infection and you are a healthy person, you almost certainly will not even notice if you have any mild flu-like symptoms anyway. So if you get if you get an infection with mild flu-like symptoms, you would simply do what we do, vitamin C, chicken soup, stay home, support your immune system with vitamin D. We know you can prophylactically use hydroxychloroquine and zinc. Dr. Zelenko's studies, if you do get it, you can use hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is non-invasive, to fully oxygenate yourself, and that can heal. There are lots of UV technologies to remove viruses, but this virus is something you will clear and develop antibodies. That's your natural vaccine. Type 1 interferons, there is a prophylactic type 1 interferon product. It's a nasal spray. You can spray it in your throat twice a day, and that will suppress or inactivate any coronaviruses you should come in contact with them. But you certainly won't catch one walking on the sidewalk 6 feet away from somebody in any healthy situation. And that kind of transmission, it just simply is fantasy, and it never was supported by data. The virus doesn't live on surfaces that long. I've done those studies. Every time I isolate a virus family, I look and see how long it lives. These things inactivate very quickly. They're envelope viruses. They can't live in the air. They don't spread through the air. They need to be in liquid. When they dry, they die. It's just not an issue. We all need to go back to work, take our lives back, take care of our immune system with good, healthy food. No glyphosate. Antioxidant glutathione is made of 3 amino acids, one of which is glycine. Glyphosate, Roundup, processed foods, contaminants of food, is cancer-causing in part because it depletes your major intracellular antioxidant glutathione. I just mentioned the kids with autism, the people with these inflammatory diseases, COPD, they don't make as much glutathione. So you're more at risk. So get healthy glutathione. There's a product called ProImmune, which has been, it literally is made by a pioneer in natural products chemistry, Dr. Albert Crum. You can buy ProImmune. It's those 3 building blocks, and you can get rid of the glyphosate, which is toxic in your glutathione. You don't have as much functional glutathione. So eat healthy. Eat GMO free. Eat farm fresh. Foods. Stay away from toxic meats. And that means antibodies with heavy antibiotics and vaccines, because those meats, those animals, those sick animals, not grown in a healthy way, not cared for in a healthy way, that are consuming lots of glyphosate, are bad for us. So we need to strengthen our immune system, go back to good old fashioned, health, and we won't get sick from COVID or anything else.
Okay, I was going to stop you here because we're winding down the end of the show. Have you ever had any experience with a Rife machine in helping to cure stuff like this?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the therapies.
Okay, great. Well, that answers a lot of questions here, because I know that that they are circulating, and about 20,000 people in America have such a device, and they are publicly available. So we just want to let people know that it's an alternative. But the thing, is the blood supply still contaminated? Should I be worried about saying, when they give me those medical forms to sign, no, I don't want a transfusion? Is that a smart move?
Contaminated, and Dave will know this is the chapter in the book about the company called Cirrus. So Dr. Rossetti, that lifelong mentor, taught me never expose a problem without having a solution. So the minute our paper was published in 2009, a company called me. This is why we need to open this up and stop the cabal of only NIH and only certain people, and open up to ingenuity the whole field again by ending the NVICA. the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act and bringing back liability to manufacturers of these dangerous drugs. Anyway, so Cirrus is a company in Northern California. They have an inactivation procedure, which is a lot like Rife. It's a UV type light, and they literally run the blood supply through it, and you can cut apart the virus, and it can never be infectious. We showed it worked not only with the XMRVs, but the Ebolas, the HIV, HTLV, and it will work with the coronavirus as well. So yes, we can clean up the blood supply, but I am horrified right now at having survivors donating blood, or even exposed people donating blood, because we're told, oh, this is a lung infection, don't worry about it. Last time I noticed, your blood runs through your lungs, I hope. Anyway, so...
Well, I appreciate that, Dr. Mikovits. We would definitely like to have you back on this program several times, because this thing is not going away, and our government, I feel, has not been honest with us. And it looks like Big Pharma, and they're all profit-driven at our expense. And this is we need to talk about this in a future program, hopefully very, very soon.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk to you again, RJ and Dave.
It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. And that's another exciting edition of City Spotlight Special Edition. You stay tuned, because we have all sorts of, I mean, this is not going to stop, and there's plenty more information to go around. Once again, Dr. Mikovits, thank you. Dave Krieger and RJ Malloy saying, like that old phrase, sine me tu, go without fear. Stay safe. We'll talk again soon. Until then, we bid you adieu.